D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick will join us as soon as he can. He's traveling with the Predators, who are in South Florida, taking on the Panthers tomorrow. But let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. And speaking of the Predators, Clark, you were apparently the good luck charm for the Predators last night. You read the starting lineup. They scored 5 goals.
Well, I'd like to take credit for that, but I think that's Bruno and his team and the boys showing up to play. It was fun. That was our first game of the season to get to, and they showed up. It was a fun night. A bunch of young guys contributing, and always good to spend a little time with the team before the game.
Clark, we will get to the college football playoff rankings in just a moment, but I do want to start on the major news involving your program, the signing of Jared Curtis. He's the program's first ever 5-star signee, decommitting from Georgia and joining your program. Now that this is official, I would love for you to take us behind the scenes on how you were able to land Jared Curtis. I know Diego Pavia played a hand in it. I guess you could say Nate Bargatze played a hand in it as well. He made a personal pitch on College Game Day a few weeks ago. But now that Jared Curtis, is a part of your program, how were you able to pull this off?
Well, I honestly, to say that anyone impacted this beyond Jared and what his vision for his future was, I think is to play a little bit in the narrative. Obviously, Diego has set a course of what's possible at that position in our program, and I think he's also proven the system to be really effective for a talented quarterback. So I think those are really positive things. But Jared is a guy that thinks for himself. He's a guy that has strength of personality that way. He believes in himself. He's got the right attitude for our program. He's got an underdog's mentality. He's a chip on the shoulder guy, and you know, he quietly reached out about a month ago and wanted to spend time around us, and you know, came over on an afternoon where we had a chance to spend some time and was with our offensive staff. And I honestly, just over that month, just kept paying attention, kind of kept showing up quietly, spending time with our players and observing our program and watching on Saturdays. And I think he was inspired by what he saw. I think he sees himself as a fit for us, and he's got a deep belief in what his potential is. And like I said, he's got strength of personality. He's going to make a decision independent of what anyone else thinks. Those are all things that will lead someone to Vanderbilt football, because that's who we are. And, you know, I'm excited. I mean, I'm excited that he felt that connected to what we're building. I'm excited that he sees a vision for himself and how he can play a role in taking us to another level. And I'm anxious to get to work with him and find out where he is so we can help progress him so that he can help us as quickly as he's able. But certainly a great statement about our program, the momentum we built, the success we've grown into, and also a statement about where we want this thing to go.
Clark, I know that you have been neck deep in materials, learning about what the College Football Playoff Committee looks for in a playoff team. I know that you've been campaigning. Diego Pavia has been campaigning. I particularly like the 2-page document with all of the numbers on it. That was right up my alley in terms of making the Commodore's case for inclusion in the College Football Playoff. But once again, the committee has your program ranked 14th. I believe this is the third consecutive week that you're at 14th, despite the big win at Tennessee. So let me ask you this. What have you learned about the College Football Playoff Committee's priorities based on how it has rated your program over the past few weeks?
I think one of my greatest frustrations is I don't know. I can't understand the process. I can't understand what they are processing. And so what I can't understand, I can't get behind. You know, I could accept being on the outside looking in if I knew exactly what the standards were, but it just seems so subjective and it just seems so conditional. And it's frustrating because I've got a team that deserves an opportunity to fight for a national championship. And part of this, you know, has to do more with what our system for selection is. So there's a part of this that I think we need to take a real step back here and rethink, you know, competitively how we select the teams into the tournament. And so that's independent of criticism of the committee. But the other side of this is feeling like this is way too human driven. It's way too emotional. And I don't trust it. And that's a frustrating feeling for a coach that has a team that, you know, has fought for the right to play for a national championship. And ultimately, all the dust will settle on Sunday and we'll figure out where we finish, and whatever is put in front of us, we're going to attack. But the experience of not really understanding what is motivating these moves and feeling like the goalposts are constantly moving, that's been really frustrating. And I think something we really need to give some attention to this offseason.
One of the comments, to your point, Clark, one of the comments the CFP chair made when asked about Vanderbilt yesterday is, well, they don't have any signature wins. But part of the reason why is you went to Tennessee, who was ranked in the CFP poll last week. You won by 3 scores, and now they're out of the CFP rankings, and it seems like you're being penalized for that. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, of course I do. Not only that, I think Tennessee's penalized for the fact that they lost to Vanderbilt. And this has to do with, I believe, some embedded bias, even in the way the computers are working through our lines for the games. And we were an underdog in that game by 2.5 points. We won by 21. So what does that tell you about what the computer system that's driving those lines thinks about our program? We're being undervalued in that process. And I'm not going to pretend to know all that goes into that, because, you know, I'm learning about a lot right now. But obviously, there's a flaw there. There's something off, that we would be underdogs by 2.5 points, that we'd win by 21. And so what I think happens in that moment is, well, it must be Tennessee's problem. That's a really good Tennessee team. And if you look back when Oklahoma won by 6 points in Knoxville, they moved up something like 7 slots in the AP poll. When we won by 21 points in the same stadium against the same team, we're downgraded by a slot in the AP poll. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And no one can explain that to me in a way that makes sense. The other part of this too is, when you look at our schedule, at the time we played the teams we played, we had 4 teams that we competed against that were ranked in the top 15. You know, and it just so happened that after losing to us, they plummet. Well, again, we don't control that. But at the time that we played those teams, they were perceived to be top 15 teams. And so it just seems to be kind of almost convenient to count us out because of those factors that we don't control, rather than to say, hey, this is a team that's earned the right to be in. And I think if it were blind resumes, I don't think there'd be any question. We would be in the tournament and we'd be rolling.
We're talking with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee, coming off of a 45-24 victory over the Volunteers. Now, Coach, I'm sure there's nothing that anyone can say to you or your team to sort of, you know, take away the frustration you have. Because if you look at
it, D-Mace, that's not necessarily true. You could say, tell me we're in, and I'd be happy.
Oh, yeah, other than saying you're in,
I think, right.
I don't think there's anything, because you guys had a tremendous season. And you did exactly what you were supposed to do, but you're getting penalized for it. And I remember, you know, many years before the playoff even got this big, when, you know, it was just 2 or 4 teams and the metrics was used, and people said, well, no, don't use the computer. Let's use humans in it, and let's form this committee. Should we go back to using more of the computer? Because it seems like now that the field is bigger, maybe using the computer is a little bit better than sort of each and every week the committee members coming in, and it may be more biased than anything.
Well, I'm going to answer this in a biased way. I saw a graphic of what the BCS computer would have projected, and I think we were 12th or 11th or something like that. So I'm all for the computers now. No, you bring up a good point. And truthfully, I mean, I'm frustrated. What I'm living through right now is an imperfect process that's evolving in real time. That's all. What we are doing is changing our sport as we live through it. And there's always going to be inconveniences that way. But right now, my responsibility is to fight for a team that I believe in. And, you know, if anything, this experience has brought clarity to me as to where those flaws are. And I'm really anxious to help support plans to reform and to create something that ultimately gets the from a competitive standpoint, the best 12 or the best 16 teams in a tournament to play against one another. So we can determine a national champion. And it makes sense. Let's stop trying to manufacture balance. Let's stop trying to manufacture fairness. Let's stop trying to manufacture Cinderella stories. And let's let the teams that played the hardest schedule, that won the most games, have an opportunity to prove their mettle in the tournament. That's the goal. Right now, it feels like we're not quite hitting the mark, and we need to put a lot of attention to this in the offseason.
Now, should they really take a close look at this? Because the landscape of college football has changed, and we all know it. But it seems like a lot of people are still operating from the old way it used to be. Now that these young men and women are able to transfer, now that they're getting paid, the landscape across college has changed. Why should they look more at that in the offseason than probably more so of the brand bias?
Well, I think that's one end of it, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's the brands don't necessarily have the best teams. And so, sometimes the brands have the most fans. And unfortunately, I think that is a motivator sometimes in these conversations. But at the end of the day, there's room for a disruptor in this, and that's what we are. We're an aggressive disruptor that is young, hungry, and agile, and we're taking ground every day. On the other end of that too, I think what you're seeing is less likely a chance that there's a contender that rises from a non Power Four conference. And that's not, look, I want to stop short of saying that there never could be, but I think it's there's been kind of just an overall elevation of the talent in the country to a few conferences, most specifically the SEC and the Big Ten. And so there needs to be, in a fair way, a representation of that actually distributes the slots in this playoff in a manner that represents what the top teams in the country are. And if I get frustrated by anything right now, it's the fact that, we could take a ACC champion into this tournament that has, multiple losses that doesn't deserve the right to be in it. And, look, if they get the chance, then, good for them. But, at the end of the day, I don't think that's right. Same thing with, a group of five champion that hasn't proven it against the best teams and the toughest schedules. I just don't think it makes any sense anymore. And I think we need to reevaluate that and not eliminate the possibility of, mm-hmm. of one of those teams playing their way into the top 16 or the top 12, but let's stop with this business of creating automatic spots for teams that haven't earned the right to be there.
Now, I know the season is not done for you guys. You still got football left, but the regular season is done. What specifically does this team means to the program moving forward? Because you talked about, and we all know, and it's been a topic of discussion the last 2 days, Jared Curtis flipping from Georgia to Vanderbilt because he envisions himself in this offense, in this program, helping to continue to uplift this program. And then you have a guy in Diego Pavia who's, in my opinion, should win the Heisman, but he will be hopefully in New York. When you look at all this, what did this specific team mean to the program moving forward?
Oh, it's been, it's hard to quantify. I think this is a legacy team. I think that every line that we trace back from a perch of sustained success and championship level performance, every line will point back to this team and really to last year's team too. I think there's been just so much ground covered, so much progress made, and it's a testament to this group of players and this staff kind of binding together to do something that no one thought was possible except for those from within. And so I want this team honored in the right way. I want to send this team off in the right way. I'm excited about award season for this team. I think that we should be in the near future bringing home a Heisman Trophy for our building. I just got to figure out where it goes because I don't have a Heisman Trophy slot. But I'll tell you, in the new building we're building, I'm going to make sure the trophy case is big enough to handle all this type of success and more. this team has done so much to reset the standards and to just really change perception. And it's our job to honor their efforts by taking this progress and pulling it forward into next season.
We're talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, here on 102.5 The Game. Clark, I just arrived in the team hotel down here in South Florida, and Andrew Brunette, as we were getting our hotel keys, said, "Can you be here tomorrow night at 6:30? Because you're 1-0 announcing the starting lineup to the guys in the locker room." So what's your schedule looking like?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm making that one. But look, you said y'all are in South Florida, is that right?
Yeah, we're in Sunrise right now. Well, Fort Lauderdale right now.
It's about 30 degrees outside here, so I may actually be able to fit
that in. It's tempting,
isn't
it?
Yeah. And Willie, I'm glad you made the call, because I wanted to talk about this ratings boost you guys experienced last night when all of a sudden I got on the TV.
Yes. Well, and Clark, I do want to thank you because, you know, you guys, the news was fresh, right? People were texting me. We were getting ready to go on the air, and, of course, you know, the guys on the show were texting me. Other people are going, you know, dang, you know, look at their 14th, et cetera. So you're absorbing that in real time, and now you're going in and announcing the starting five. For those that don't know, Clark went into the Predators locker room, and, you know, they on occasion will bring a special guest in to announce to the team who's starting on the ice, and Clark was nice enough to do that. I don't know, what was it, Clark, 30 minutes, 15 minutes after you found out?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Willie. I was pulling into the, like, I was pulling into the loading dock down there when Jared called me. So, like, and you know, we had kind of, it wasn't a surprise, but I actually took the call as I was pulling in, which was really cool, and it gave a little energy boost to me as I was watching the game.
Well, that's great. And you know, so you do that, then you did the interview with us, so we certainly appreciate you, and the Predators went on to win. I want to ask you just a couple more things about this whole process here. You guys did what you really had to do because of what had happened in the weeks leading up. I think you knew that you needed the committee to look at you through a different prism, especially after finishing off with the big win against Tennessee. And you put out some really hard-worked information, or I don't know what the right word is. You really scrutinized with a lot of layers to present information that may not have been easy to see before. Do you think the committee really looked through that and gave it what it deserved, right? As a member of a committee trying to get all the information possible, did you get that feeling that they really looked at it close?
No, I mean, I you know, I don't. And I want to be careful, because I want to be respectful of people that are trying to do their jobs, and it's a hard job. I don't think there's a world where you're considering all the things that make this team what it is. And, you know, look, they moved Utah behind us, then moved Texas in front of us. It just, you got a three loss team now ahead of us in the standings, because head to head matchups matter in that situation, but not when it comes down to Notre Dame and Miami. There's so much inconsistency in the way that they're approaching this process, and that's what's really frustrating to me. And it's human, right? And that's, I think that's what happens when you're talking about, you know, human nature and subjectivity. It's going to be imperfect, but it's negatively impacting a team that I care a lot about, a team that I believe has earned the right to be in it. And I can't imagine that they're taking this new information in and considering it, because it did nothing to strengthen, you know, our position in the tournament.
This is a what if question that I don't know if we'll ever find out the answer to, because this is how they do it. It's for TV. But I'm curious how the process would be different if the committee today, for the first time, met and said, for the next 3 days, now we know everybody's played 12 games, nobody's talked to anybody, but we've done our own research. We'll see what happens with the championship games, but let's now, for the first time, rank teams. I wonder how it would change, as opposed to the week-to-week climb, or whatever you call this. Do you think it would be different?
I think that's an excellent idea, Willie, and I think you may have solved everything in that thought. And
who do I need to call?
I mean, what they've done is they've created TV time that obviously matters to you know, invested parties, but it also has created the moving goalpost thing that I referenced earlier, where it seems like every week there's a new set of reasons or standards or expectations. And I think locking the door for 3 days and hashing through it and using the numbers and getting it right, I think that is a way cleaner process than playing this out over the course of however many weeks, 6 weeks or whatever it is, 4 weeks, which again is sloppy. And and because those polls are ever changing, then the playoff picture is ever changing. One thing I referenced earlier too was this idea that after beating Tennessee, Oklahoma improved in the polls by 7 spots, and then after we beat, they won by 6 points, we beat Tennessee by 21 points, and we actually fell in the AP poll. And I think what you're seeing is those polls are taking form around the playoff picture. So, you know, it all kind of works to influence the other entities. I think if you just let those things breathe on their own and let those form around the strength of performance of each team, I think then you're going to have a clearer picture of where the best teams in the country exist. And I think that gives our team the best chance. The other thing I'd like to see them do is work blind resumes into it, because that also is a way to ensure that you're eliminating human bias as best you can. I mean, at the end of the day, we have former coaches, we have ADs of current programs that are involved in this. And so it's hard, just like, you know, I think the perfect solution, Willie, is probably just let me select all the teams, you know, then then I won't have any complaints, you know. But
right,
we're human, we have bias. You know, I think how do we best eliminate that? Your idea of punting all the selection into kind of 3 days postseason is a great idea. I think making it blind and just looking at the resumes for what they are give us the best chance to get the 12 best teams in.
Last thing, Clark, just for perspective, right? Everybody's a little down today. They'll get back up and appreciate what you guys have done. But I want to take you back 2 years, right? And I can remember being at a practice with you before that season started. But your satisfaction level, the answer is obvious, but could you have envisioned going from where you were 2 years ago at the end of the season to where you are now?
Willie, was that the practice where you were questioning every play call and you were saying, why?
No, there were a lot of cranes and there was a lot of construction. It took me a while to get to the field, but so much has changed in those 2 years, I guess is what I'm getting at. It's just amazing to see what has happened.
No, it is. I'm joking. I was trying to get you to go into Coach Willie mode.
No, I wasn't trying to get you to run the eye bone or anything like that. I don't think I had anything that radical.
Hey, Clark, just so you know, I have banned Coach Willie from the program. After the end of the regular season, he has been banned from the program.
That's okay. Well, that's good to know. You guys, I'm on the team, so I need to know these things. I think Willie, I first of all, I appreciate the question. I'm very proud of the pivot we made after that 23 season. I look back on that as like obviously a critical inflection point in our program. And yet there was some real clarity around kind of the course we needed ahead and the fact that we had deviated a little bit, or maybe we hadn't adjusted and adapted fast enough. But there was never a point where I didn't feel like this was where we were headed. You know, there was never a point where I put limitations on what I thought this could become. But I will tell you, man, I am very happy to be where we are, and I'm grateful for it, because once you've lived through the hard parts of this, you kind of learn how to celebrate the fun parts of it. And that's, you know, today, what a celebration today was. Not only did we have a class of players that we believed in already committed, but the fact that we were able to turn two local players committed to SEC rivals into Commodores. I mean, what an amazing statement about where we're headed. And there's a lot of important work out of us, but again, that's the fun part. We're going to get a chance to pull this program into sustainability and to take it further. I'm not going to place limitations on what that looks like either. You know, we're heading that way. I know it's going to be hard. I know there are going to be challenges along the way, but I'm super excited about the climb ahead, and I'm grateful to be able to be on this journey.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lea has been our guest on the Mace Vangen and Donicky. Joins us every week during college football season. Clark, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Clark had to say. You can as well at 615-737-1025. Let's try to solve all the world's problems and figure out how the CFP selection process can be rectified. based on what we heard from Clark Lee. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.